Welcome to the Naturalistic Nurse Podcast with Audrey Christie, helping you shift from Band-Aid fixes to root cause resolutions that stick.
Hey friends, today we're talking about heart health, and I can't believe we made it through the entire month of February without talking about it. But today we're going to talk about a truly heart-healthy diet, some indicators for heart health that you should know, as well as some make-or-break habits for your heart health, plant medicine, and all things pointing to heart health. So first I want to start off with our heart, because a lot of people don't realize that it's actually our primary organ. Often we're taught in school that the heart is constantly responding to orders sent from the brain in the form of neural signals, but it's not commonly known that the heart actually sends more signals to the brain than the brain sends to the heart. The heart is the first thing that develops in fetal development, right? Way before the brain. If you've ever had a child or a partner's had a child, then you know that there's a beating heart and one of the very first things that you can see and hear in an ultrasound. And that's why the heart is considered the primary organ of the body. So physically, the heart serves some really important functions, right? It manages blood supply and blood pressure. It secures one-way blood flow, right? So the way the heart pumps makes sure that the blood doesn't back up. So oxygenated blood going where it shouldn't and unoxygenated blood being sent out to the tissues. It's also, of course, in that same sort of description, responsible for transmitting blood. But I also want you to think of the heart on the energetic function, right? So as I mentioned, the heart is the primary organ and it actually develops first, way before the brain. And a lot that people don't understand is that we learned back in 1863 that the heart actually receives information, right? It receives information from our environment, from nature, from other people, from objects around us. A lot of that information enters through the heart, and then subsequently the heart gives the brain information, and that two-way connection starts to happen. The heart directs the brain, although it often feels different if you aren't perceptive of it. If you're not in the present moment, you might not notice. So if you think about when you get scared, it feels like your brain is scared and sending a message to your heart to start like racing or pumping fast. What actually happens is the heart perceives the threat first, sends the message to the brain, then the brain sends the message back to the heart to start racing and prep for that fight, flight, or freeze reaction, right? That reaction that starts to pull the blood from your digestive tract so that it stops or slows and force that blood, that oxygen out to your tissues so that you can make the decision to fight, flight, or freeze, or have the muscle power to do that. It also narrows your vision, changes your breathing pattern, and of course changes the rate at which your heart pumps. That communication sets into motion a cascade of events that really brings everything to work into harmony so that you can escape the danger or fight the danger. So one thing to know is that the heart field extends at least 3 feet all the way around the body. Most of the time it's up to 12 feet. And when measured, right, when you measure the heart's electrical activity versus that of the brain, the heart field is actually 100 times stronger than the brain's field, which is pretty cool, right? So when we're thinking of heart health in terms of an unhealthy heart or heart disease, we have to look in terms of not just that physical heart health, but also the energetic heart health. And really they work in concert with each other. Heart disease, we know, is the number one killer of Americans. We know that there's lots of common surgical treatments and pharmaceutical interventions. You can take lots of medicine for it. And we've seen a really steep increase in heart disease over the last 70 years. Now, I think the reason why we're so nonchalant about heart disease is because modern medicine has so many ways to just step in and save our lives, right? I've said time and time again, taking medication for the rest of your life without changing anything else, even having a quadruple bypass, doesn't fix your heart. It only temporarily masks the symptoms. But we have these modern conveniences that if you were to fall over from a heart attack, it's likely that you would survive because you would have immediate emergency medical assistance. They would take you to the hospital. They would have that valve, that vein, that artery cleared out in no time flat, and you'd be back on your way. So I want you to think, though, about that heart bypass, about that stent, about that repair. Does it fix the problem? The answer is no, it doesn't. Its very name, bypass, it bypasses the issue, but the issue's still there. All that bypass is doing, all that heart stent is doing, is buying you time to make the changes that you need to make so that you can actually heal your heart. So one thing that conventional medicine, modern medicine does to check for heart disease, if you will, they usually, you find out if you have a heart risk or a heart health risk at your annual physical. So they'll probably have you in there once a year, maybe do an EKG, maybe some lab work. It all kind of depends on your age and your risk. And then they might make some recommendations like lower your salt or lower your fat intake. They might talk about sugar and stress. And they might talk to you about your cholesterol levels. And if they have to talk to you about your cholesterol levels, it's very, very likely that you will leave there with a fancy prescription for a statin drug or other cholesterol-lowering medication. But here's the problem. Those aren't really good predictors of heart health. They aren't really good measures to talk about for heart health. So let's talk about what real predictors of heart health are. And really, your cholesterol has very little to do with it. So real predictors of heart health are things like heart rate and rhythm, triglycerides, homocysteine levels, and then ongoing underlying inflammation, all of which you can sort of assess. You could assess at an annual physical. They're not most of the time assessing these things at an annual physical. But let's talk about the things they're going to tell you matter. So what about fat? When you look at the steep incline in heart disease and the consumption of fats, there really isn't a correlation. When people consumed more fat, they actually died less of heart disease. And then around the 50s and 60s, humans became super obsessed with fat being so very low. And then with a, you know, when that happened, we sort of steered away from fat altogether. And the interesting part about that is we didn't see a decline in cardiovascular events, right? So in short, no, fat, it does not really correlate to heart disease. There are some things about fats that are important, but eating a low-fat diet in general is not even a good symptom manager, okay? The next thing I mentioned that they might talk to you about is salt. Here's the thing, friends. Salt is a critical mineral for your body, a critical mineral for your heart health. The caveat is, well, there's two caveats, really. One, heart disease is blamed on the wrong white powder. It's not salt, it's sugar, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. And second of all, the iodized yucky processed table salt, the white salt, the Morton's, that is the kind of salt that is dangerous to your heart health. If you choose a full mineral salt, like a pink Himalayan salt or a Celtic sea salt, those are actually very, very good for your body, and you can use them pretty liberally, even if you have a risk for heart disease. The other white sugar, which is the real thing to blame here, is or the other white powder, I should say, which is the real thing to blame here, is sugar. So before we had refined sugar, so if you can rewind your mind or think back a few generations, we had what? Maybe honey for sweetener? Maybe someone tapped a maple tree, got some maple syrup? As a species, we had maybe 35 grams of natural sugar every single week. Okay, and now we're about 1,700 grams on an average week of a refined and processed sugar. Now, this is a major, major contributor to heart disease by way of inflammation. So you eat this refined processed sugar, it causes inflammation, and that causes heart disease. Now, the funny thing is, when I talk about this, people automatically assume, you know, Audrey's saying go keto, and that's not what I'm saying. You need to eat fruit. What sugars are, when sugars are contained in whole live food like fruit, your body can put that nutrients to use appropriately. When you use a natural sweetener like some honey or some maple syrup or some coconut sugar, That's okay to have that dessert treat with those sugars. What you need to avoid are those heavily refined processed packaged sugars that are used to either make processed food more shelf stable or are in overly processed confections like candy that you would buy on the shelf. Anything that is obviously full of high fructose corn syrup. Those are things that you need to avoid. So then let's talk about the big guns here, cholesterol, because that's the one I hear a lot about. So cholesterol is a fat-like waxy substance. It's contained in every single cell in the body, and it's manufactured and secreted by the liver. It is 100% necessary for cholesterol to be present in your human suit, although it's really been vilified in modern medicine as something to be scared of. In your body, cholesterol is a precursor and necessary ingredient to the creation of vitamin D. It's a precursor for hormones that break down fats and carbohydrates and proteins so that your body can use them. Your brain also needs cholesterol to just kind of be floating around because it helps to create and transport important neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. You might recognize those as happy hormones, right? So cholesterol got a really bad reputation back in the 70s from this really misleading study, and it shaped all of the way that modern medicine treats cholesterol. So it was a large study published in the 70s, and the study wasn't a bad study, but the summary was published in a really negative way. And for nearly 40 years after that, it's been one of the biggest cash cows that pharmaceutical companies have ever created, because cholesterol-lowering medications, also called statins, are a billion with a B dollar industry. So you can look at what this misleading study, this impact that it's had on the American populations and the pockets of drug companies. But before this study came out, an average of 2% of Americans were on cholesterol-lowering medications. And heck, they might have needed it. Who knows? But now, over 50% of Americans over the age of 65 take medication to lower their cholesterol. As I said, those studies were kind of flipped the cholesterol culture on its head. They were published in a super misleading way. And their goal of reducing cholesterol is mostly pointless in effort, because medication actually only reduces cholesterol levels about 2%. 2%. That's not worth all of the side effects. That being said, there's still a lot of talk. Even when I give this information, I'll always get people in the audience that raise their hand and say, my good cholesterol is da 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 da. My bad cholesterol is da 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 da. Here's the thing, friends. It's all just cholesterol. The difference between LDL and HDL isn't good or bad. It's just the size of the particles and how the particles function. HDL stands for high density lipoprotein. It's a lot of times thought of as the good cholesterol. And I've heard kind of a cool reference for it. You can think of it as a hybrid car, right? It's small. It drives around picking up cholesterol particles from the cells and takes them to the liver for breakdown and disposal. HDL, hybrid car. You want to have a lot of hybrid cars because they're good for the environment. LDL, or low density lipoproteins, is a bigger particle than HDL. So think of it like a Suburban or a van. It transports cholesterol from the liver to the tissues to be used in metabolism by the cells. So LDL picks up all the stuff that HDL can't, right? Because it's a Suburban, and you can fit a whole lot more in a Suburban than you can in a Prius, right? So it takes all the things that the HDL can't, oxidizes it, and then it creates little sticky patches in the arteries, right? So cholesterol itself doesn't clog the arteries. The LDL creates sticky areas in the arterial vessels that catch things like calcium and fatty acids and fibrous stuff and turns it into plaques, right? And that's what leads to heart disease. Again, more important than the numbers of either of these standalone or even your total cholesterol is actually the assessment of the ratio between your total cholesterol numbers and your triglycerides. So when we're thinking about your cholesterol labs, when your HDL cholesterol is too low, when you have too few hybrid cars zooming around, right? Your liver is likely overburdened and needs a break. And that's a really good reason, a really good time to do something to nourish your liver. One of the things I often recommend is a seasonal detox to help do that. Now, you have to be cautious with the detoxes that you use because a straight juice detox is often going to make the problem worse. You have to really have foods that are thought of uniquely to help massage, really is a good word, massage that liver into improving its ability to move those toxins out, right? A lot of times this happens from too much omega-6, too many processed foods. It can happen from drug residues, supplements, alcohol. And when you think of drug residues, supplements, or alcohol, anything that you put in your body has to be processed by the liver. So if you already have low HDL, then you're likely making it worse every time you eat something processed, every time you pop a pill, be it prescription or over the counter, every time you take a supplement, if you're drinking any alcohol. Other things that can overburden your liver are just a lack of movement, right? We have to move our bodies in order for our bodies to be able to move stuff internally. Liver disease, stress, and anger are also often issues with the liver. Kind of on the flip side of that, if you have high LDL cholesterol, that's a different problem, right? That's major inflammation, okay? So that's inflammation of the tissues, inflammatory agents in the bloodstream. It can be a sign of an infection. What it's definitely not is a Lipitor deficiency, okay? So when you're looking at these labs, it's really, really important to notice the cholesterol, right? But don't make any big decisions based on it. Look functionally at a different, more in-depth set of numbers, comparing it to other lab levels to see the full body rather than just focusing on one system. Because if one system's out of balance, other things are out of balance, and that might not be the initial domino that fell. One thing I want you to remember from this is that statin drugs increase cardiac risk and they only decrease cholesterol by 2%, best case scenario. So I'm harping a lot on this cholesterol and how much it doesn't matter, but what labs really matter when talking about heart disease? The most important ones to evaluate include that triglyceride to total cholesterol level. We want that to be 40 to 60%. Insulin, critical for heart health. Cortisol, also critical for heart health. Estrogen and progesterone ratios, very, very important in both men, estrogen in men and estrogen, progesterone in women. Testosterone, important in both men and women. Decreased testosterone in men or increased testosterone in women can be signals of heart health. C-reactive protein, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, homocysteine levels. And then that C-reactive protein is I would get a highly sensitive CRP there. So here's a fun fact for you. What is the most proven frequent predictive issue for a heart attack? And I want you to think back to that information I gave at the beginning of the episode about the energy field of the heart. And also understand that no physical symptom occurs in a vacuum. And so it's really, really important to take a holistic approach to everything, including heart health, because there are physical, emotional, and energetic aspects to every single disease process. But the number one proven most frequent predictive issue for a heart attack is actually social isolation or loneliness. So a feeling, an emotion is a better predictor for heart disease or cardiac events than any of those other physical malfunctions. So when you're thinking of supporting the physical body or your human suit, it's vitally important to be aware, connected, and coherent in your heart, because your heart sets the rhythm for everything, energetically and physically, for the rest of your body. We know, and studies prove to us, and it's even well known in conventional medicine, that people who have heart attacks or strokes tend to sink into a depression and stress after it occurs. Equally as well known that people who are sad or depressed and have high stress have a much higher chance of having an adverse cardiovascular event. So if you recall back to the beginning, when I talked about the energy field, I said the number one cause of cardiac event is a change in heart rhythm. And this can happen from emotional hurt around the heart, from social isolation. So let's talk about some things that we can do to set our hearts up for health, for wellness, for lasting us a long, long time. Number one, nutritionally, we need to eat more plants, green leafy vegetables, eat the rainbow. You need to increase omega-3s. You need to eat low carb, moderate protein, high in good fats, right? Eliminate dairy and eliminate gluten. Very, very key for heart health. Supplementally, I really want you to understand that none of these things are the lock and key for heart health, but it's important to do all of these things. But it's really going to, these supplements round out what everyone should kind of be taking. It's a good baseline for heart health. So think of omega-3s, probiotics, and then a lot of people come to me on D3. Here's the thing, and good on the doctors, the conventional med doctors, for beginning to understand that D3 is important for people to take. It's important to have high D3 levels. However, a lot of times they don't know yet that D3 needs to come along with K2. So it's important to take D3 and K2 together. Don't take D3 alone. D3 and K2 need to be taken together, okay? And I don't want you to throw away your D3, but next bottle needs to be D3, K2. Herbs that are particularly helpful for heart health: hawthorn berry, arjuna, mother's wort, red yeast rice, hibiscus tea, and then adaptogens. Adaptogens are one of my favorite categories of herbs and foods and fungi because they work by filling in the gaps for what the body needs. So there is really hard to over-tweak or under-tweak yourself with adaptogens. A good way to think of an adaptogen is like a really good friend, one that comes over to vent because they had a terrible day, but when the friend walks in the room and sees you super excited about something, they sort of like immediately flip the switch and switch to joy to celebrate you, right? That's kind of what adaptogens do in your body. Some of my favorite include reishi and holy basil. Essential oils can be really, really beneficial as an adjunct therapy, especially on that emotional release front. I really like bergamot and lemongrass, eucalyptus, frankincense, geranium, and rose for this. It's really beneficial because they support that mind-heart connection on a physical, energetic, and emotional level. So you can diffuse them or just apply them right over your heart. You can also use other pulse points, right? And then if all else fails, third eye right between your eyebrows, just above the eyebrow line, and your toe tips are always appropriate. So it would be remiss not to discuss stress and social isolation. And I've said this before, but stress is absolutely perceived. So what's stressful for me is probably not stressful for you, and vice versa. And on top of that, the different perceptions of stress that we have, not only is stress perceived differently, but you can also choose what not to be stressed about, right? It's just a choice. And some people are like, what? You're crazy. I can't choose not to be stressed. Absolutely, you can. And so that's something really, really important to recognize as you're working through your stress and stress mitigation techniques, that your options start with, can I just choose not to be stressed about this? And it doesn't matter if that's to unload it on something else or to release control, or release your need to control, or simply choose differently, right? Just choose differently. And you can ask for help from your higher power for that as well. But you just ask, how does this get better? Another stress reduction technique could be, you know, some more traditional stress reduction techniques like meditation or massage or walking or just getting outside and grounding, right? Social isolation, it can be a little bit more difficult to address, but community fixes that. So church groups, active groups, either online or in person, meetups, walking groups, all of those things are really, really great. And then the last thing I want to talk about is energy work for the heart. Very best things you can do are getting those bare feet on the earth and grounding. So bare feet on the earth or a hand on a live tree. You can also tap for heart health. You just tap right over the heart, right over the energy meridian. And then energy medicine techniques, of course, for reducing stress and eliminating emotional burdens. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Naturalistic Nurse Podcast. I hope this has shed some light on how to heal the heart and what truly matters when considering heart health. If you'd like to contribute to this podcasting effort of getting the word out about how to ditch Band-Aid fixes, ditch the bypasses, or at least heal after the bypasses and shift to root cause resolutions that stick, I would love for you to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. because I would be oh so grateful. Be well.